session number 10644, reel 2.
Admiral Easton, reel 2.
And that was the first occasion in which we dived bomb. The next occasion was when we were supporting the attacks on Narvik. But the fact, but to return to where we were, now we was come back to England in the Sunderland, and. If I recall rightly, had a dare to leave in London, and then went back up to Hatstone, where we embarked in the Ark Royal. And early in May in 1940, the British had set up a base at Harstad, prior to, with the intention of taking Narvik. The Germans were in Narvik. And the British base at Harstad and the troops around Narvik had been having some very severe bombing. So we went up in the Ark Royal and flew fighter patrols over Harstad. And we, I think actually the first patrols were on the 6th of May that we had our first fighters over Harstad. We did have a brush with some Junkers 88s. And if I recall rightly, we shot down two on one sortie when... which was, I think, one of the very early sorties in which we were up there. And there's no doubt that the presence of the skuas did inhibit a good deal of the bombing that followed. But while we were up there, we also flew off on one day sorties to try to dive bomb the entrance to the tunnel which that brought the railway from Sweden into Norway, through which the iron ore used to come, which was, of course, the crucial element in the whole of the Norwegian campaign. And that was really only the second time, I think, that we used the skuas as dive bombers. How successful we were, I don't know. I think, I don't believe we blocked it for any period of time, but we got them down fairly close to the entrance. It was a difficult target, because when you pulled out, you were faced with these great walls of mountains, and I recall having very considerable doubts as to whether I was going to be able to pull the aircraft up and round before I hit the side of the mountain. And indeed, I recall putting down full flap and everything else to try and reduce my turning circle. But we were up there for a while. And then I recall I went in with a section to investigate the approaches to the airfield north of Narvik, on which we wanted to put down some Hurricanes, I think in the first instance some Gladiators, and later some Hurricanes. And we went in really to do a weather report. Well, we were flying, there was a lot of, it was a very bad day, a lot of fog low down, a lot of cloud high up, and moving my mixture control from strong to weak, or weak to strong, because I was not keeping up with the leader or something, my engine cut out. And I had to... So the next thing was, of course, I found myself without, detached once again from the section leader. And, however, I flew on, I flew on into the coast and found the entrance to the fjord, which by then was pretty familiar with me. Went up, followed it up to Narvik, and tried to penetrate further north to see if I could reach this airfield. But it was quite impossible. The clouds were right down over the top of the mountains, and it was obviously going to be extremely dangerous for any aircraft to try and penetrate through there and land on the airfield. So I returned to Harstad and got my air gunner to flash a signal to a destroyer saying that the approaches to the airfield were obscured and it would be impossible to make a proper approach. And that message, I subsequently discovered, arrived just after the first Gladiator had taken off. And unfortunately, the first three Gladiators all hit the side of a mountain, but they did stop the others going. I think of the Gladiators that hit, certainly one survived because I came back with him later in the ship, but two, I think, had been killed. I then went out to sea again to look for the carrier and tried the beacon and the usual performance and no answer and no sign. And so I went back to Harstad and picked out an island, which I thought looked as if I could... It looked as if there was a piece of grass that might conceivably be long enough to do a landing on. And I landed, I tried to do a wheels down landing because I thought if I could get some fuel, I might be able to take off again and rejoin the carrier when I could find out where it was. But it was very, very soft on the ground, so the wheels went straight in, the aircraft went straight up on its nose, the entire engine was wrenched right off. And we did a few cartwheels, but quite unhurt, both my air gun and myself. We came to full stop. And so I then had a meal with a farmer there, and then was picked up by an army boat and went to joined some army mess in Harstad, and the next day came back in a merchant ship in a convoy that was leaving Harstad. And as I said, when I came back then, there was with us, I think it may have been a day or two later, but there was with us, was the pilot of one of the Gladiators that hit the mountain. And he'd had a very interesting tale to tell because he'd sort of slid down this mountain on his arse with the snow and gripping onto bits of fir tree and things as he went. And he'd had the horrific experience of seeing these other two on either side of him just going in and exploding. I find the dates very confusing, but I think the sequence really was that we were operating these sort of fighter patrols and bombing the entrance of the tunnel and things in early May. It was, I think, on the 10th of May that, or it may have been a day or two later, that I was returning, having had to leave the aircraft on the island off Harstad, returning in the merchant ship when we heard of the German invasion of the Low Countries. In any case, I returned to England then in that ship, and we formed up another part squadron of eight skuas, which I think by that time I was then the senior officer of. I think I was still a sub-lieutenant, to work them up to go back to rejoin the Ark Royal as replacements. In due course, I led them out to sea, and we landed on the Ark Royal off the Orkneys. In fact, we landed on the Ark Royal just a day or two after the Glorious had been sunk. The Ark had carried out an attack on the Scharnhorst and the Neisenau, which had then sought shelter in Trondheim. The Scharnhorst had been hit by a torpedo from one of the Glorious's escorting destroyers, and those German pocket battleships had had to go back into Trondheim. Fleet Air Arm attacked them with skuas again. I think, if I recall rightly, there were 16 skuas that attacked and something like 8 that were lost, mostly to ME-110s that were in Trondheim waiting for them. The Ark Royal then returned to Scarpa, and I remember the 8 skuas that I flew on board that day were the same numbers that the Ark had lost on that attack in Trondheim. But by then, effectively, the Norwegian campaign was over. The Narvik was being evacuated. It was in the evacuation of Narvik operation that the Glorious had caught it. And we all returned to Scarpa Flow. And we were there, really, until July, if I recall correctly, when we sailed for the Mediterranean and Force H.
This was the attack on Zalkabir, was it?
Well, yes, the first operations we carried out once we had joined Force H was the attack on the French at Mers El Kabir. That was a singularly horrific operation. Of course, we didn't know too much about the political and strategic background to it. I don't think there's any doubt that the generality of feeling was one of considerable sickness that we found ourselves in this position of. But, of course, initially we didn't expect the French to do anything but accept one or other of our terms, because the terms were fairly generous. I mean, they were that they could either sail the whole fleet to Martinique and Guadeloupe and be interned there for the war in French territory, or they could join us, which seemed to us to be the most sensible answer. Or they could sink their ships where they were. And if they weren't prepared to accept any of these alternatives, then we would have to open fire on them. The terms of the ultimatum were taken in by our captain, who'd been the naval attaché in Paris just before he joined us, the captain of the Ark Royal. And we waited for a very long time, past the time when the ultimatum had expired, and we went on waiting. After a while, we sowed magnetic mines in the entrance to the harbour. And very shortly after that, if I recall rightly, the French cruiser Strasbourg, I think it was, with 2 destroyers, broke clear of the port. If I remember rightly, one of her destroyers went ahead and blew up on a magnetic mine. She followed in the path and got through, but I'm not too sure of that. We detached the Renown or the Repulse, which was one of our faster battle cruisers, to try and bring it to action, but it, although it pursued it to the east for a considerable while, it was unsuccessful. And we then opened fire. I was flying a skua on fighter patrol over the fleet at that time, and then we were ordered into Iran to protect some skuas that we sent in to do some torpedo bombing. And it was a very sickening sight to see these huge chunks of the jetty going up in the air, and the vast explosions and the flames leaping out of the French ships. Our allies of the morning before, that morning. Anyway, I got a Derwentine on my tail, a French Derwentine fighter, which attacked me, but either his guns jammed or he didn't open fire, because although I simply couldn't get him off my tail, we weren't hit. We came back from that to Gibraltar, And it was a day or two later, we went in again, and sank the Dunkirk. The Dunkirk had been damaged, but she hadn't been sunk, and she was still okay.
Did you attack the Dunkirk yourself?
No, I didn't. No, she was attacked by torpedo bombers and torpedoed. She was attacked by swordfish. We simply provided fighter protection for the swordfish. There was one rather sickening episode in the second attack on Mazel Kabir when the Dunkirk was torpedoed, because one of the torpedoes hit a Liberty boat, which was approaching the Dunkirk, and a very large number of French seamen were in the water. And one of our swordfish pilots in the mess after the attack was boasting that he had machine gunned the French sailors in the water. I was very pro-French at that time, and I remember having a flaming row with him, but it wasn't really just I think everybody in the mess was disgusted with him, and he very quickly realized that this was not a boast that he'd better persist in, because people were, on the whole, very sickened by it.
What was his background?
He was a short service entry into the Fleet Air Arm. He had, in fact, been flying for Franco during the Spanish Civil War. He was a very buccaneer-type chap. He was a very good pilot. He was a brave man, I think, but he had a very big gap somewhere in his moral armament.
I think you said that when you were at Gibraltar, you had some contact with British refugees from France.
Well, Gibraltar was awash with them, of course, at this time. They were coming into Gibraltar from the south of France in every old tramp steamer or motor yacht or whatever was mobile in the south of France was bringing in a fairly continuous stream of British expatriates. And, of course, amongst them were some usual quite interesting sort of people who, at that time, were resident in the south of France. And there was, of course, no accommodation in Gibraltar. They were, all the hotels and things were, people were in sleeping bags in the corridors and in the passages, and you pick your way across these people into the bar and things. It was gave Gibraltar a strange atmosphere, but quite a sort of convivial carnival one in a way. While actually we were there, the French, of course, responded to the Mazel Kabir attack with an attack on Gibraltar, which, if I recall rightly, was very unsuccessful. And indeed, it was a little while later when a convoy was formed of all the sort of ships that had brought and motorboats and things that had brought people out of the south of France that were thought to be capable of taking them to England. A convoy was formed of them, and they set off for the UK with some destroyer protection. I recall at that time French Glen Martin bomber came over, waggling its wings to show that it had no hostile intent, and managed to do a belly landing in the water. We're obviously coming to join the De Gaulle element. But it very carefully picked out the nicest looking of a couple of steam yachts to put itself down close by, and was picked up, and they went off, I suppose, directly to England too.
Now, I think the next time you were in action was in West Africa, was it not?
The next time, yes, because we came back to England, and we 803 re-equipped with Fulmers. And we then joined HMS Formidable. And Formidable was part of the fleet that went down to West Africa to try and take Dakar. So the next operations were the Dakar operations. Again, in Dakar, we were providing simply fighter protection. we lost... First of all, of course, we went to Freetown. And at Freetown, and if you recall, what had happened was that we passed two French cruisers just after leaving Gibraltar, which in fact were taking down gendarmerie and loyal French Vichy troops to reinforce, put some backbone to the defences of Dakar. We didn't stop these ships, which we probably should have done. We were under orders, of course, from London. And we let them proceed. We went on down to Freetown. And at Freetown we assembled, where we also took on board some French Dewa teams with their pilots who were planning to take off from us and land on at the airport at Dakar, where they expected to be given a warm welcome. And that would be, in fact, the first action taken in the effort to recover Dakar. These chaps, of course, were presumably under the command of, ultimately, of de Gaulle. But they were embarked with us, and when we eventually went up to Dakar, they came with us, and they took off at just before dawn. Flew in, so they arrived at dawn off the airfield, but unfortunately they were met by some pretty heavy machine gun fire and not by a warm welcome, because the whole Dakar picture had, in some certain areas at least, been transformed by the arrival of these forces from metropolitan France that had been taken down the two cruisers. The Dakar affair, again, was the sort of thing that I think Evelyn Waugh did write about very well. It was I don't know whether it was the last of the really amateur operations to some extent, but I mean, it seemed to me that Norway and Dakar were to some extent all of a piece. We lost some planes because the French were operating some American fighters that were a great deal higher performance than the Skuas. We lost some Swordfish, and we lost, I think, one Skua. I was actually up on fighter patrol on the day that the French submarine torpedoed the Barham. Pretty sure it was about, there were two battleships with us, one was about. And we indeed suddenly saw these silver fish going straight for the battleships. We dived down onto them, firing our machine guns in the water. Weather, and also the leader sent out a signal, a radio signal. In any case, too late, but the battleships turned to starboard to try to feather the torpedo wakes, but we saw the torpedo strike the Barham and explode, and that was the Barham, really. I mean, she was badly damaged, and she had to go, and it was really largely probably the decisive thing which finished the Dakar operation.
How much chance was there of exploding a torpedo like that?
Oh, no, practically none. I mean, we were shooting at it with any hope of being able to. I mean, a 303 entering the water would be completely deflected by the water, really. We were doing it simply to indicate where they were and draw attention of the battleships to them.
Where was the Barham struck?
If I recall, she was struck just above the midships on the port side. I can see her now. I can see the fish going. I can see the thing turning, and I can see the sort of great shoot of water as where it hit. And I call rightly, it was about there. I've got myself confused again in this. Confused in the sequence of things, because it was while we were still with Force H, still in Skuas in 803 Squadron, and still aboard Ark Royal, that we became part of the Dakar attack force. The changeover to Fulmers came later, after the Dakar operation. So I'd like to just get that straight. We were still in Skiers at this time. We returned to, if I recall rightly, we returned to Freetown, and then from Freetown we went back to the UK. And certainly it was at this time that we, 803 Squadron, was re-equipped with Fulmers. And after a while we embarked aboard the Formidable. Well, the next thing to occur, really, was that the Formidable, with her Skers, with her Fulmers, and the rest of her complement, of course, was on the way down the coast of West Africa to go around to attack, to recover Syria, again with the help of the Vichy French, to recover the De Gaulle French, to recover Syria from the Vichy French. I can't call precisely these. So it was really probably about in the spring of 41 that we were embarked in Formidable with the Fulmers, and on our way down the west coast of Africa to go around to try and recover Syria from the Vichy French with the help of the Free French. On the way down, we received word that there were German pocket battleships somewhere out in the Atlantic, and not very far from our vicinity. So searches were, aircraft were set off on searches. And if I recall rightly, there weren't enough observers to go around. We were sent off on a course to... of a dogleg, of course, to steer, then a dogleg, and then back, and told that, again, we might get the beacon or we might not get the beacon. And it was returning from this that, again, no sign of the carrier. I spent a number of hours, well, a long time, chasing what looked like the tracks of ships in the water, but I think I'm pretty clear were just current rips that had made a particular sort of formation in on a very calm sea. It was a lot of fog and a lot of low mist from about sort of 200 feet up to about